so improbable, the impossible has happened.
A shot on Elo. Good! The Bulls win!
You know what time it is.
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic.
Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James with the rejection!
Holy cow! Oh my God! I don't believe it! It just continues!
Excellence. Welcome back into another episode of the Sports Hour. This is Mitch Moe.
And this is Dallin. Guys, welcome into a Monday night edition of the podcast. It is good to be here. It is February 13th, and we had to drop in on a Monday evening here, Mitch. We are live on the YouTube channel, youtube.com/thesportshour, guys, on our Twitter as well, at sportshour, guys. And in the future, you're hearing this on your podcast feed, but we had to drop in on Monday night, Mitch, because Super Bowl Sunday has passed, the epic matchup between the Chiefs and the Eagles. We've witnessed it. We've enjoyed it, and we are here to react to it. Super Bowl 57. We didn't want to waste any time, take too many days with it. We've sat with our thoughts now, and I'm ready to kind of just break down this game, react to everything last night, not just the game itself, but all that comes with the Super Bowl. It's going to be a fun time here on this Monday night, Mitch. I cannot wait.
Yeah, it's like a little prime time podcasting right now. Monday night, we're gonna get in a little prime time podcasting here. It was a great Super Bowl. I'm excited to react to it. I'm glad we didn't hold our thoughts until Wednesday, which is when our show is. Make sure to tune in every Wednesday, 6 p.m. Pacific time for those normal podcasts. There will be no Wednesday podcast this week, by the way, guys.
Yes.
This will be the show for the week. This is it. This
guys,
is it.
Listen,
this is kind of where our focus needs to be.
Valentine's Day. I have a dinner reservation on Wednesday night that I have to make with my wife because she works late on Tuesday. We can't go on Valentine's Day. So I'm sorry. That's just how it is. But, you know, we got priorities, right, Mitch? We got things we have to do. And again, like you said, I mean, who wants to sit with these thoughts for too many days? You know, the Super Bowl just happened.
Yeah.
And we don't want to waste too much time. So, before we jump into the game itself and any of the festivities, I need to ask first and foremost to you, Mitch, how was your Super Bowl experience? Yeah, we saw the Instagram stories. We saw the wing review on the Instagram reels. And by the way, if you don't follow us on the Instagram already, check out the banner below at the Sports Hour, guys. Check out the Instagram. Great content there. Mitch dropped a wing review. You gave it a high score. They were really that good.
They were exquisite.
Oh,
exquisite.
Love it.
That's the best adjective I guess I could come up for. No, they're great. They were great. They were everything that they were hyped up to be. They definitely met the mark. Actually just had some before we met up for our little pre-podcast meeting.
Okay.
So,
double down.
Yeah, absolutely. They were great wings. I think, you know what? I might make it a regular thing. Do a little wing review. Sorry, Dave Portnoy, to kind of steal the pizza. You know, he does the pizza reviews and everything like that. Man, why not do a wing review? It'd be fun.
Yeah,
it'd be fun.
Art is imitation, Mitch. Imitation is art, you know?
And imitation is flattery, right?
Exactly. And no idea is original. So, hey, I love it. Wing reviews on the Instagram. You love to see it. And on the TikTok, too, by the way. Got to get those on the TikTok, my friend.
I think I tried to post one. I don't know if it loaded up. It was being fickle. I don't know but what the deal was.
Technology is a fickle beast sometimes.
Yeah. So we will get those wing reviews up on the TikTok as well.
Yes. Yes.
But no, our spread was fantastic. My gal did a fantastic job of putting a spread out. It was a small party. But it was a fun one. It was good people, good company, great game. It was a good evening watching the biggest game of the year.
Love it. Awesome. I'm glad to hear.
I was
a good time.
So you and your wife must have had a good evening as well.
Yes, we did. It was just us. No, nobody else. We just kept it solitos. But we made some great food. We made I made mango habanero, homemade mango habanero sauce, like mango habanero wings. First time making like mango habanero sauce, and it turned out amazing. So I was very happy about that. We made some garlic parmesan wings as well. And then some Philly cheesesteak sliders, you know, which I didn't intend to go along with the Super Bowl matchup with the Eagles, but I like my brain did, and it craved just cheesesteaks, I guess. So that's what we had, and they were also delicious. Little buffalo dip, chicken dip. So yeah, it was a good time. It was very chill, but I kind of like it, Mitch, because I like having people around. I want to entertain. I want to interact, but I kind of just want to watch football too. So the football freak inside of me is like, actually, this is better. Like, nobody talk to me. I just want to be here with this, you know, with this game right now. So
you're locked in. Yeah,
absolutely. So it was a great time. Super Bowl Sunday is always fun. The day, by the way, before we get into this, the day after the Super Bowl should be a national holiday. Okay. Like whoever runs, whatever politician runs on that platform gets all the votes. It should be a national holiday. Work should be, everybody should have it off for the hangover, for the celebration. We should just have the day after the Super Bowl off.
I shouldn't have to burn a vacation day like I am right now. I shouldn't have to do that. Right. There's no way.
There you
go. No way. This is a national, it really should be a national holiday because, you know,
exactly.
You got to think that there's some countries that do that for World Cup finals. I mean,
oh yeah. Oh yeah.
There's got to be people that do that. Why can't we do it for our World Cup final, which is the Super Bowl? So like,
right.
Why can't we do that?
You know, like the biggest sporting event in the world every year. No big deal. But yeah. Anywho. All right, Mitch, let's jump into this game. Super Bowl 57, Eagles and Chiefs. And starting with just the festivities in general, a little bit of the pregame. I want to get your thoughts on some of the singers. Arizona, by the way, I mean, a great setting. I loved that the roof was open. The field is another thing. We'll maybe talk about that when we get into the game itself. But the open roof was a nice touch. You know, it's a great place to host a game. And I liked that element of it. I thought that was kind of nice to have there, but great entertainment before the game with the national anthem and others.
Yeah. I mean, the national anthem was, if you read the banner below where I'm at, I cried during the national anthem. Chris Stapleton just did a absolutely beautiful, succinct. It wasn't flashy, but damn it. Did he hit every single note like he always does? Chris Stapleton is elite. I mean, yes. No one compares to him. Hit every single note, and it brought a tear to my eye. Hear the nation's national anthem with his voice. It was just, it was an absolutely touching and outstanding performance on the part of Chris Stapleton. Everyone criticizes the national anthem. Of course, we've had really good ones. The first one that comes to mind is Whitney Houston's rendition of it. Would have been the 91 Super Bowl. And then there's the really bad ones, like Fergie at the All-Star Game. So like
All-Star Game.
Yeah. So like the national anthem matters when it comes to having a great performance. And Chris Stapleton absolutely delivered. Fantastic performance from him. And the night was off to a very, very good start with Chris Stapleton doing the national anthem.
Yeah, it's hard to really impress doing the national anthem because everybody does it. Everybody knows it. It's not, you know, and a lot of people do it really, really well. So it's hard to stay. It's really easy to do it bad, you know, go see Fergie, but like, it's really hard to like really impress. And I thought Chris Stapleton really impressed. I mean, he did his Chris Stapleton thing and he left his mark on it. And I mean, he's just an incredible performer and singer. So I just thought, yeah, I mean, he nailed it. I mean,
It's one of those songs that like, man, like you said, it's really hard to screw up or it's really easy to screw up because it's a difficult song to sing.
Right.
And everyone tries to put their own flair and twist and arrangement on it. And man, you take one wrong step in the arrangement and people are going to remember that one wrong step. Like, you have to nail the national anthem. And he just kept it simple. He kept it with pretty much, okay, this is the way it's written. I'm going to sing it this way. And absolutely delivered. He delivered.
Yes. Chris Stapleton. Big fans of Chris Stapleton here on this podcast. I love Chris Stapleton. Yes. As we've said before. So, yes, he absolutely killed it. Mitch, let's get into the game. And the way that we want to break down this game today is we sort of recap what happened in Super Bowl 57. We're going to go chronologically from the beginning to the end, as this game did come down to the wire. And that's awesome, Mitch. I want to start this off by saying that one of my storylines coming into this game was that we were guaranteed a classic, right? Because the previous two Super Bowls hosted at this stadium were classics. It was the Super Bowl between the Seahawks and the Patriots in 2015, and it was the Giants and Patriots Super Bowl with the perfect Patriots, right, back in 2008. So we had seen two of the greatest Super Bowls ever already heading in this stadium. So we just knew we were in for a classic, and I love that that played out. I was thinking that at the end of the game, I was like, hey, look at us. We've made it. Can we host Super Bowls here every year? If they're going to be this good, can we host them here every year? And can we change the field? Can we get some other field situation turned down and maybe not paint so much of it so guys are slipping everywhere? But,
Yeah.
Arizona, great setting. So, Mitch, starting this off, first note here. I thought, you know, you made sort of a fighting boxing analogy when we were talking about this game last week, and you brought up a point of not throwing your best punch too early or not hitting that big shot too early, right, in the game, and. That boxing metaphor has kind of stuck with me throughout the week, and watching this game very much felt like that boxing match. In the beginning of this game, though, it was very much two fighters just exchanging blows, right? Eagles go right down the field on the opening drive, score on their touchdown. Chiefs follow it up, go right down the field, score on their touchdown. Mahomes is locked in. Hurts is locked in. And I think from that jump, it set the tone for this game, right? That these were the two best teams in the league. They were both 14-win regular season teams, two offenses scored the same amount of points, two juggernauts were in for a battle, and they immediately started that game off exchanging those blows.
Yeah, I mean, I made the analogy of the boxing because that's what made most sense in my head was like, hey, don't throw your biggest punch too early. But also, you also have to keep in mind that, like, if they leave themselves uncovered, throw the hook, you know? Take advantage of when they leave themselves uncovered, throw the big hook. And Philly did that in their first drive. Kansas City left themselves totally exposed. Philly took advantage of that and went down and scored the first touchdown of the game pretty handily, by the way. I mean, that first drive, it went pretty quick. And it was almost like before you knew it, it was 7-0. And you're like, oh my God, they only burned 3 minutes off the clock and they're already up 7-0. Now the rest of the game would tell a different story as far as possession goes. But that first drive, they took advantage of what was given to them. And, Philly just capitalized on everything that Kansas City gave them, which is exactly what you should do. Don't not take advantage of what they're giving you, go ahead and attack it. And Philly did a great job on the first drive there with what we thought was going to be the touchdown with Kenneth Gainwell. And then it gets called back. And then there was the QB draw with Jalen Hurts going in for the first score. So
those first touchdown drive props, for Kenneth Gainwell were just absolutely livid when that gets called back. And it
goes he was short. I mean, he was short.
Listen, he was short, but the moment of, oh my, we hit this, because the odds on Gainwell were huge. So you know that they were about to win big, and then, oh, it gets taken away. Hurts gets the touchdown. But, Philly, Kansas City, exchange touchdowns on that first drive. It's 7-7. The next sort of notable part of this game, which I do think set a tone in the first half of this game and a narrative throughout, was aggression, right? Mm. When to be aggressive, when not to be. The first sign of somebody not being aggressive was the Kansas City Chiefs electing to, they missed the field goal, in the first quarter, right? They're able to go down, not get enough. They missed the field goal. This is 2:24 left in the first quarter, and Philly capitalizes on that mistake, scores a touchdown on the ensuing drive. I thought this play was interesting, Mitch. This was the A.J. Brown touchdown in double coverage. Oh, yeah. And this was very much just a throwing it up to my guy and AJ go make a play. You're bigger and stronger than everybody else. And he is. I mean, you saw him on the field against those DBs. He is. He's bigger and stronger than everybody else. And he just goes up and makes that play. And I thought that was awesome. A great moment. And throughout this game, I think he proved it. And maybe this play is sort of emblematic of it. But this game very much proved why the Eagles needed to make that move for AJ Brown and why that was a good decision, trading away that first round pick. That was probably one of the best first round picks anybody spent this year, right? Between drafting players and doing anything else with it. That was probably one of the best things any team did this year. The first round pick was the Eagles trading kit for AJ Brown and bringing in that weapon. And we saw how effective Goddard was and how effective Devontae Smith was throughout the game, but man, did AJ Brown come up in big ways that those guys couldn't, adding an element run after the catch, but also that big time, big catch, go over two guys and just manhandle, physically come down with the ball. He did it on that play. I thought that was awesome.
Yeah. I mean, we talk about AJ Brown almost like he is Megatron, or, you know, like he's Calvin Johnson, like he's AJ Green, this big, lengthy 6'4", 6'5" guy. He's 6'1". Like, but he plays like he's 6'4", 6'5". And that's what I love about AJ Brown. He plays bigger than what he actually is. He's beefy for a wide receiver too. 226. He's a thick boy. He's a thick boy. Mm-hmm. And I love the way that he plays, his physicality. And you're absolutely right. Probably the best first round investment that anyone made this entire year was AJ Brown going to the Eagles, giving Jalen Hurts that number one option in that offense. And it came to show as we went, as kind of the game went on, it came really evident that AJ Brown was going to be a part of this offensive attack in a bigger way than I think a lot of people thought. I think they were going to probably spread the ball out a little bit. I certainly thought they were. But he was going to be kind of that big play, that big threat that AJ Brown is fully capable of being every single play.
Yeah, absolutely. Eagles go up on this play 14-7. They force a three and out from the Chiefs, get the ball back. And then the biggest defensive play of the game by far, the Nick Bolton strip sack and touchdown on the fumble recovery. Just an incredible play, right? This is, I believe it's third down or maybe it's even fourth down. I'm going to pull this up real quick. Just so I make sure, third and five,
yeah,
third and five.
Yeah.
Third and five. And that we talked about this in our prep, but the Eagles ran a lot of QB draw in this game and to some success. And we'll talk about some of those moments in just a second, but in this play, they run a QB draw or an attempted QB draw on third and five, but penetration early by Nick Bolton on the blitz. He strips Jalen Hurts, is able to recover the ball in stride and return it for a touchdown. And that is a costly mistake. The only turnover of the game for either team there. And it costs them seven. And really, I mean, you can look at the game as a whole and say it costs them the game. You know, this is a 3-point game at the end of it. It's 38-35. Chiefs win this one. That play right there, you know what I mean? That turnover, even if you just punt it away, you know, you just, though, in a game that's so tight with teams that are so good and the margins are so small, it's the little things like that matter. This is a huge play, but certainly I think it makes a big difference in the grand scheme of how this played out.
Oh no, it certainly did. And I think that this is where my criticism of the running quarterback, not just necessarily the mobile quarterback, but the running quarterback. And we'll get into how important we think that is in just a little bit, but they're not ball carriers. Like, their ball security is definitely not what a running back would be on a third and five situation. Right.
Right.
Especially in a quarterback draw. I mean, you're spreading the field out wide. You're trying to get as few people as you can inside the box so that you can create a little bit of space and you let your guy use his feet, do his thing and get a first down. And it was a poorly handled ball by Jalen Hurts.
Right.
And I don't want to say that this loss is on Jalen Hurts, because it's not, but this was definitely a huge momentum swing as far as the way the rest of the game would go moving forward from that play.
Yeah, that mistake was costly, Mitch, and that mistake is solely on Jalen Hurts. So you're right in your in the way that you're thinking, because, yeah, you don't want to say the loss is on him, because it's not as simple as that. But that mistake certainly made a difference in this game, and that was a mistake that he made and a big play by the Chiefs defense when they needed it. The good news for the Eagles, Mitch, is that they followed this up immediately with a touchdown drive, which I thought was very impressive. They go right down the field, 12 plays, 75 yards, 7-minute drive. I believe this is their second longest drive, by the way, 2 7-minute drives in this Super Bowl. I mean, we talked about ball control, but geez, you're just eating up clock in this game. And that was one of the things I mentioned in this matchup. Who was going to control the ball? Just keeping everybody else off the field was going to make such a difference. And the Eagles, for large parts of this game, really controlled the ball. This was a great case of that. Again, 12 plays, 75 yards. They score here. This was... you had a 4th and 5 on this one. This was a QB draw. We talked about QB draw. 4th and 5, they go for it, and they call a QB draw with Jalen Hurts, but it works. He ends up picking up like almost 30 yards on the play, getting him down into the red zone. He ends up scoring a touchdown with 2:20 left in the second. They cut, you know, they take half of the quarter away. They extend the lead after the turnover, get the lead back after that costly turnover and touchdown, and just completely shift momentum right back in their favor. I thought that was a very impressive turnaround for that team, and specifically for Jalen Hurts, who was obviously incredible on that drive, but to make such a costly mistake in the Super Bowl and then bounce back and lead your team right down the field on this sort of drive and continue to make big plays throughout it. I mean, just go. We could talk a lot about Hurts right now if you want. We can have the conversation now about Hurts if you want, because I'm ready to go, because he was incredible in this game.
I mean, we can definitely have that. I just want to say, though, too, that like this showed that Nick Sirianni, this is his guy, and that he trusts him to go out there and carry the ball again after a fumble. But like, hey, yeah, we missed it. But hey, guess what? 4th and 5, I'm going to put the ball in your hands again, because you are a massive part of why we're here in the first place. So I'm going to give you the ball again. Forget the mistake. Go ahead, move forward. 4th and 5, picks up 30, gets him a first down. They wind up scoring on the drive anyway. It showed a lot of confidence in Jalen Hurts that Nick Sirianni has. And that's part of being a head coach is putting trust in the guys, in your guys, right? You know, the guys that you really trust to carry that team forward and look past the mistakes, move forward from them, learn from them, move forward from them, and keep trucking along. And so props to Nick Sirianni, keep putting the ball back in his guy's hand, because Jalen Hurts is that guy for Philadelphia.
Yeah, and Hurts proved why that confidence was warranted, right, with his performance in this right. game. He was – I tweeted this after the game. I still stand by it. He was the Super Bowl MVP in this game. There's no doubt in my mind. It's fine that they gave it to Mahomes. I understand. But it doesn't matter that he lost the Super Bowl. He had 4 touchdowns in this game. He was the best football player on the field in this game. He was. Yep. He was. That was the observation yep. I took away from this game. And I'm going to be honest, Mitch, I am shocked that we got here. When we talked about the Eagles a year ago, we talked about the offseason. It seemed like they were, based on the success of last year, that they're moving forward with Jalen Hurts. And that was fine. But there was a big question of like whether that was going to pay off. You know, whether he was going to make that necessary leap, that he was that guy that they had showed confidence in to make those leaps. And he did it this year. He's second in MVP voting for a reason. If he plays those 2 games he misses, he might be the MVP. And then he leads his team to the Super Bowl, and he has 4 touchdowns in this game. He did everything you want from your quarterback. Elite passing, accurate passing down the field, accurate passing short, getting the ball out quick, taking care of the ball for the most part, outside of the 1 costly turnover that he talked about. And then making plays with his feet, which is what these dual threat mobile quarterbacks can do. And this is why NFL teams covet these guys so hard, because that's what it looks like at its best. Jalen Hurts in Super Bowl 57 is what an elite dual threat quarterback looks like at its best in the NFL. That was it. That was good enough to win a Super Bowl. That was really freaking good. And so when you're an NFL team and you're looking at your quarterback room and you're looking at Jared Goff or you're looking at Baker Mayfield and you're in no disrespect to those guys, but when you're looking at those other guys and then you see athletic players like Jalen Hurts and Lamar Jackson and the like, who then also play at this elite level. When you see a guy like Jalen, who's putting it together, not with just his run game, but with the passing ability, extreme accuracy, dialed in. I mean, it's what you want. It's exactly what we'd want to see. And I'm honestly just, I am so happy that Jalen Hurts got there. I'm surprised in a good way. I don't want to say I'm surprised in a bad way. It's not like I didn't think he was incapable, but I just didn't think we'd get here. And it was incredible to watch. Is he like a top? Where does he rank in quarterbacks in the NFL right now? Like, Super Bowl's over. We're heading into next season. Like, he's top five for sure. But like, right? He's top five for sure. I mean, he kind of has to be. I don't know, dude. It's crazy.
He's at 4 or 5 for me, I think.
I mean, clearly behind Mahomes, Burrow, Allen, right? That's fine. Those three at the top.
But I mean, who else do you? So just based off like who else do you put Lamar ahead of him?
No, absolutely not right now.
I wouldn't. No,
you wouldn't put Lamar. You wouldn't put like Trevor Lawrence. You wouldn't anyone from the NFC. I mean, Aaron Rodgers. Like, who the hell knows where if he's even? You know,
yeah.
You know, you're not talking Matt Stafford. I mean, it's like Dak Prescott is like the next best guy. So,
yeah, he's a top five quarterback right now.
Yeah,
he is, and it's pretty
Justin
solid.
Herbert. Do you put him ahead of Justin Herbert? I would.
No,
I would personally. I think I was ahead of him.
Excuse me.
Would you put him ahead of Herbert's? Yeah, yeah.
Yes, I would put him ahead of Herbert. Yes. So I think Herbert's like been overhyped. Five. I think Herbert.
Is that like the top five right there?
Herbert hasn't even given me a really good reason outside of that playoff run they had a couple years ago that like makes me think that he's a top five quarterback in the league. I almost want to put Dak ahead of him.
Oh,
which I know sounds funny, but like Justin is, he's talented. It may be a product of what's around him and
sure, you know,
what he's the situation that he's in, and he may be much more talented than what he's actually looking like. He puts up the gaudy numbers, but also Philip Rivers put up the gaudy numbers. But Philip Rivers is also a top five quarterback at one point. I don't know. Yeah. I would put Jalen above Justin Herbert. I don't know if Herbert makes the top five for me.
Okay.
That's a conversation. Five's
he's
the
borderline.
Conversation.
He's borderline. Yeah, I think that's fair. I think he's at least borderline. I am curious, Mitch, I'm pulling this up. I love this. I had to pull out receipts because I'm just curious about this conversation. Not for anything about you're saying, but this brought up last year. We did our top five quarterbacks in the NFL, right? Around the same time. In fact, in our notes, I have it on. We did it on January 25th last year. And we ranked our top five quarterbacks in the NFL last year. Here's just for fun. Here are our lists. And just think about how much can change in a year, right? We saw what Joe Burrow did last year in the playoff run. Now you see like a leap that Jalen Hurts has taken. My top five last year, 1 to 5, Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, Russell Wilson, Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson. Your top five, Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, Justin Herbert, Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
So, you know,
a lot can change in a year, man.
A lot can change in a year, which is just fascinating. But yeah, I mean, I think Hurts is a top five guy. I mean, again, and that's not just off of the Super Bowl performance. He was a MVP this year. He was an MVP this season for the Philadelphia Eagles all year round. This is not just like a Super Bowl performance. He was great. So I do think, Mitch, Anthony Richardson draft stock is going to skyrocket. That's my takeaway from this. And maybe it's not a good thing. That's the quarterback from Florida, 6'4", 245, big run threat. Very toolsy, but is very raw. But when you see a guy like Jalen Hurts do that, you think if we could get Anthony Richardson to look like 80% of that, we could have a star. You start talking yourself into, we got to go get that guy, right? And that's what NFL teams do. And they overreact to what we see, right? We see it every year in the league. They overreact to what we see. What did we see? Dual threat quarterbacks are good. All right, go get that guy, right? You know, that's how it works. So we'll see how that actually plays out. But I am curious to see how that, you know, changes maybe moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, definitely it's going to be interesting to see how that changes.
Yeah,
changes for sure.
Let's get back into the game, Mitch. This is 2 minutes left in the second quarter here. We have the Mahomes tweaking his ankle on this ensuing drive after the Eagles take the 21-14 lead. Mahomes tweaks the ankle on third down, trying to make a play with it. And you could tell he was obviously pretty hobbled coming off the field. And obviously that was a huge storyline for the rest of the game. Was he that injured in the second half? What they did in those 29 minutes of halftime, you know, how many or what kinds of drugs he got to be able to play without thinking about it in the second half, you know, we may never know, but he had tweaked that ankle 2 weeks ago. You could clearly see, I mean, he rolls up on it. You clearly see he immediately is like, yep, that did not feel good. And I think it was maybe an overblown narrative for the rest of the game. Again, we'll never really know, I guess, how injured he was or how hobbled he really was there, but definitely interesting how much of a narrative that became.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I mean, it was a huge narrative of, you know, is he totally healthy? Is he feeling okay? Is he fine? How well, you know, what did they do in that locker room at halftime? Is it taped up all the way? I just, you know, I understand playing on a sprained ankle and I understand it hurts. I guess I just have a problem with like ESPN comparing it to Jack Youngblood playing on a broken leg for 3 games. And yep, them comparing it to that, that's just laughable. I mean, that's just like, it's not even the same atmosphere as far as what he did. But I'm sure it hurt, you know, like I'm sure it hurt. I know it hurt, but, you know, it was gritty. It was a gritty performance from Patrick Mahomes. I mean, yeah, I don't want to take anything away from it. It was a gritty performance. Was it the grittiest we've ever seen? No. So we should stop treating it like that. But
not everything has to be the greatest and the worst and the best and exactly, the grittiest. You know, it's okay. It was a gritty performance.
But was it gritty nonetheless? Yes. It was. I always thought, like, we had this conversation actually on our fantasy football chat board last night. If Mahomes were to retire today, would he be a top 10 quarterback of all time? Would he be one of the greatest of all time if you were to retire today? I'm just curious to get your thoughts on that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think we kind of like talked about this a little. Well, we did talk about this when we did our QB drafts, our best QB drafts of all time, because I mentioned that I considered Patrick Mahomes in that exercise. And ultimately, I didn't pick him, right? He didn't make our top 10 because he can't. He's played 5 seasons. It's just what he has done is incredible, right? He wins the second Super Bowl ring. He wins another Super Bowl MVP. He wins another MVP. And that is all incredible. This 5-year run is maybe the greatest, one of the greatest we've ever seen. Like, we can make arguments in that realm all day long. I'm cool with it. But if he retired tomorrow, he just simply would not be considered a top 10 quarterback of all time. And I don't care what anybody says in that regard. They're lying. They're lying if they say that 20 years from now, they would consider him a top 10 quarterback of all time if he retired tomorrow. You just wouldn't. Tomorrow you might. And next week you might, because you love Patrick Mahomes and the recency bias is getting you. But 20 years down the road, you're not going to look at a guy who played 5 years and won 2 MVPs and 2 Super Bowls and be like top 10 quarterback of all time. We will just not do it. We just won't. So it's just kind of a, a mute point. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't know.
And I've been accused of nostalgia bias. Okay. Like I love the history.
And
of
it's
the
probably
game.
Fair a little bit, you know,
it is, to some degree it is, but like when I talk about Patrick Mahomes, it's like, we talk about like an everlasting mark that he made on the game. Yes. This 5-year run has made an everlasting mark on this game. Right. You know, the run that he's had over his first 5 years as a full-time starter in the NFL is unmatched, right? No one's ever going to come close. But Dan Fouts made an everlasting mark in his career with the Eric Coryell offense in the 80s, and he's still not in the Hall of Fame. Like, just because you make an everlasting mark on the league does not mean that you're going to be a Hall of Famer. And I think that you can make the argument right now, if he were to retire tomorrow, a top 20 quarterback, top 20, top 5 or top 10. Yeah, you're getting in some murky waters, and I don't think you can make a good enough case for him to be top 10. But I did want to bring that up because that was a question that was posed to us. And I think that what he's done in this, and just, you know, it was evident last night and how he played this game, especially in the second half. He was fantastic in the second half. Fantastic all game, but the second half especially. He is one of the best quarterbacks of his era, but if he were to retire tomorrow, no, there's no way in hell he's a top 10 quarterback of all time. Yeah. Not even close.
Yeah, let us know your thoughts, where you stand on this. If you're watching live on YouTube or Twitter tonight, let us know in the comments. Do you think Patrick Mahomes, does this win solidify him as a top 10 quarterback in your mind? Or are you with Mitch and I that he's going to need to play a lot longer before he can be in that conversation? If you're listening later on, send us a message on Instagram, on TikTok, Twitter, wherever you want. Let us know your thoughts. We'd love to hear from you. Yep. Mitch, to round out the second quarter here, Eagles get the ball back, got a nice special teams return by Britton Covey, gets them near midfield. They take advantage. You get the Devontae Smith catch, not catch, right? A little controversial call. They called it a catch, gets reversed, brings back. That was probably the right call there. It was pretty iffy at best on that. But the Eagles are still able to get into field goal range, kick a field goal to enter the half, leading 24-14. And, you know, they talked about the records coming out of the half, right? Mahomes is like 14 and 10 in his career when trailing by 10 points at halftime. And the Eagles, or Jalen Hurts, had like one loss in his whole career. You know, it's like they'd been, it was basically locked up, you know, to go into the Super Bowl with a double digit lead like that hasn't been surmounted very often. But obviously the Chiefs were up to the task. And I thought, you know, obviously that first half, very much the Eagles were in control. There were moments where the Chiefs really righted the ship and made some plays, but you know, besides a fluky turnover on defense that turns into a touchdown, their offense had one score on the opening drive, and that was it. You know, the Chiefs, for the most part in that first half, was really ineffective on offense, and the Eagles had really handled and been in control. But Chiefs come out of halftime, and they score on that opening drive in very impressive fashion. 10 plays, 75 yards, 5.5 minutes. And it felt like this was the moment, at least that I felt, that momentum shifted towards Kansas City. Everything else in the second half was shifted towards the Chiefs. And the Eagles were obviously still in this game. Like, they still lead in this game. But this was the moment where momentum started to shift away from Philly and towards Kansas City. And you started seeing the Chiefs are going to get back in this game. And it's going to be a close one here at the end.
Yeah, I mean, this is the turning point for me, is where, like, we need to start talking about the MVP of the Super Bowl actually being the coordinators of Kansas City. Steve Spagnuolo and Eric Bieniemy were absolutely fantastic in the second half. And you know what? They made the right adjustments. They made all the adjustments that were necessary and imperative to them staying in this ball game. It was almost a night and day type of thing. Like, that Kansas City Chiefs team that we saw in the first half was not the same team that we saw in the second half. They made all the right adjustments, and it was very self-evident from the word go at the start of the second half that the Chiefs got something figured out. They okay, they They've waded the waters. They've felt it out. Now we know how we're going to attack this Philly defense. This Philly defense has been fantastic all year long. And we know that we're how we're going to attack them, how we're going to neutralize all their threats and keep the ball moving down the field. Kansas City did that from the word go in the second half. I mean, it was a fantastic first drive from the Chiefs to start the third quarter.
Yeah, Chiefs ended up scoring 24 points in the second half. They scored on all four of their offensive drives. And you brought up coaching, Mitch, and I think that was a big difference in the second half. In the first half, it did feel like Philly had the advantage, right? Their coordinators, their offense was hitting the right buttons. Their defense was hitting the right buttons. Nick Sirianni was being aggressive at the right moments, going for it on fourth down, keeping this offense on the field and scoring points. And then the second half, as you said, it did shift. And in that next possession, Eagles start off their second half with a long drive. They end up with a fourth and six with a minute 48 left in the third quarter, right? So mind you, this is the second drive of the second half, and we are basically entirely through the third quarter. Right? The Chiefs had a 5.5 minute drive. This drive for the Eagles is 7 minutes, 45 seconds, 17 plays. And on fourth and six, despite being aggressive earlier in the game on fourth and five, despite being aggressive all game long on fourth down, Nick Sirianni chooses to kick a field goal here. And they make the field goal and it puts them up 27-21. But this was the first conservative call by Sirianni all day, and it was the first time I think he got out of his game, Bam. He got out of his game. He got out of his zone. He was locked in. He was making all the right decisions. He was pressing all the right buttons, and he didn't stay aggressive, and he backed off here. And listen, you take 3 points, like, that's fine, but in the grand scheme of this game, that mattered, and giving the Chiefs more opportunities and more time in the clock mattered. You know, you take an extra 2 minutes off the clock, even if you still kick a field goal, but you converted that. I mean, all those things make a difference. And to see him make a conservative call in that place where he had been aggressive all game, I thought, obviously a big moment in this game that really shifts it for Kansas City.
And I think that's going to be a great lesson for Nick Sirianni is, yeah, like, don't take your foot off the pedal. Like, you have the momentum, you have a 10-point lead, you have the momentum. Don't stop being aggressive. And especially when your defense is, you know, they just got taken to school. Like, don't stop being aggressive. Keep the foot down on the pedal, drive the spike, continue to be aggressive, and to walk away with a 33-yard field goal there is almost not a win on that drive. It's almost not a win on that drive. And because you have the momentum in your favor and you didn't take advantage of it. And it's just, it leaves a bad taste in your mouth at the end of that drive.
Yeah, especially when you consider Kansas City follows it up with another touchdown. They score 12 minutes left in the fourth quarter. This is on the play to Tony. He's like wide open on it. In fact, apparently Andy Reid says the play is called corn dog. That is the play call. So when Patrick Mahomes got into the huddle
Andy,
on that,
that's the most Andy Reid play name I've ever.
You know
heard
why he said? Well, you love it. You love it, you know, because it's a corn dog. You know, throw a little mustard on it. You throw a little ketchup. I sent you a TikTok on it. Yeah, you got to watch it. I sent Mitch a TikTok on it, but it's called corn dog. The play was called corn dog. So Patrick Mahomes got in the huddle, yelled, "Okay, guys, corn dog, corn dog," and that was the play. They scored a touchdown on it. So you love to see it. But this moment here. 12 minutes left in the fourth quarter. Kansas City takes their first lead of the game. Philadelphia trails in the playoffs for the first time in the fourth quarter in the Super Bowl. Is the first time they trailed in this playoffs. And obviously, momentum shifting here. After this, Mitch, 3-and-out by Philly. Kansas City gets the ball back. And this, again, we talk about Super Bowls. All three phases of the game have to be locked in. You got to be locked in on offense. You got to be locked in on defense. But you have to be locked in on special teams. And Kadarius Toney with one of the biggest plays of the game on that punt return, a near touchdown. I mean, I thought he was going to take it in. He gets to like the 5-yard line. But that play right there, defense forces a 3-and-out. You've taken the lead. You're up 28-27. Defense forces a 3-and-out. Punt team, special teams gets you right at the 5-yard line. Easy touchdown to Sky Moore on the little wide receiver zip. And you're all of a sudden, you're up 8 points with 9 minutes. And it's just boom right there. That is just that it's executing on all phases. And I mean, the Chiefs did it in this game, that special teams play. That's what those make the difference.
Yeah, I mean, Kadarius Toney with the longest punt return in NFL history. In the Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah.
In the Super Bowl.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so longest punt return in Super Bowl history.
Hell yeah.
Gets him down to the five. And then Sky Moore. I've always wondered how they were going to utilize him, because he just did not seem to fit well in that wide receiver role. He's an undersized kind of guy. How are you going to use him? I think they found out in this game how they're going to use him, which is out of the backfield, kind of a flex back slot guy that's going to be just kind of a Swiss Army knife for them as far as, you know, a receiving, rushing type of weapon. And they used him to perfection there on that touchdown pass. Sky Moore wide open in the flat. He could have walked in to that one and scored that touchdown. So a brilliant play call on the 5-yard line, but it was set up by an absolutely fantastic special teams play on the part of the Kansas City Chiefs and Kadarius Toney.
Yeah, the use of motion in this game by the Kansas City Chiefs offense, they're constantly bringing Toney in that jet motion across the formation and forcing the Eagles to pass that off. And in this case, they use that to the advantage. They motion more from the outside into the line, but instead of moving forward in the play, he plants, moves back out. But the defender is not ready for that because they've been motioning across for 60 minutes. So he's not ready for the stop, and boom, Moore cuts right back out and he's wide open there, as you said. And I think that's what's emblematic of a good offense and good play callers, Mitch. You mentioned it with Sky Moore, but they using your players the right way. I mean, just think of the different weapons they have in Kansas City and all the ways they utilize them, right? Kelsey, middle of the field, give him space, let him pick up some yards. Juju Smith-Schuster, what's he best at? Possession. Little slants on the RPO, that's when they target Juju Smith-Schuster. Little outs toward the sideline, they're not sending him deep. They're not doing things with those guys they're not good at. They use them at their strengths in the best way possible, maximizing their weapons. That's how they were able to have the number one scoring offense in this league, despite trading away Tyreek Hill. And it was on full display in this game, as you mentioned. So incredible stuff here. Again, Kansas City takes the lead at this point, 8-point lead with 9:22 left. But Mitch, this game was certainly not over yet. And at this point, again, resilience for Jalen Hurts and this Eagles team is a theme for me, a takeaway from this game. They showed it all game long. This drive, emblematic of that. Hurts leads them right down the field, 8 plays, 75 yards, scores a touchdown. You have the long, deep shot on the left side to Devontae Smith, who was huge in this game, led the team in both receptions and receiving yards, had 100 yards in the Super Bowl. But big, necessary, got to go down there, got to score, need a touchdown. Jalen Hurts takes him down there. They score a touchdown. And then the 2-point conversion to tie the game, Mitch, with 5:15 left. And they just sweep it. It's a QB sweep. Just sweep it outside. You pull some linemen out there and let Hurts just get in there. And that was all Jalen Hurts. That was probably one of, if not his best play of the game, honestly. He forced his way in the end zone. He was not going to be denied. And when you see that sort of Cam Newton-esque power as a quarterback from him, it's like, man, when you're looking like Cam Newton and you're also, dotting dimes and you're also doing, it's like, holy cow, just incredible. I loved it. That was an awesome play by Hurts.
Yeah, it was beautiful play design. And probably the best play that Philly ran all day long, I think, is that 2-point conversion. I mean, you pull the tackle on the guard, you get them outside, you get them to seal off that edge so that Jalen could just get, he doesn't have to get much, right? He only has to get 4 yards
right
at the most to get into the end zone, and you just seal him off. We basically saw that was showcasing Philly's offensive line the way they've been all year long, seeing that, like, hey, yeah, we are the best offensive line in football. And we got that showcase basically there on that quarterback sweep, because if they don't get that seal, Jalen's sitting there 1 yard short, and we're talking about a different ball game now. Now we're talking about a, hey, it's 35-33, and Chiefs are taking the ball over, and we're running the clock out of way, way sooner than what we anticipated. So it's not even a ball game anymore at that point. It was probably the best play that Philly ran all game long. Granted, they didn't turn out on the right end of the deal, but schematically speaking, it was one of the best plays that I saw Philly run all night long was that 2-point conversion.
Yeah, that's a good point. And fitting for their last real offensive play, right? As they get one play at the very end of the game, but as their last real offensive effort, a great effort, as you mentioned, a great execution there to tie the game in a pivotal moment. And then Mahomes magic, Mitch. And then Mahomes magic, right? Yeah. Mahomes gets the ball back with 5 minutes left and he doesn't give it back, basically. You know, he drives him right down the field. They're within 2 minutes. They're in the red zone. And, you know, there's a big play earlier in this drive. I believe it was, I'm trying to think of what yardage it was, but the Mahomes scramble, it was a first and 10, but they're at the 43 yard line, but Mahomes with the hobbledness, however injured he is, making plays on the ground. He runs for 17, gets him well into field goal range. That was the moment where you're like, okay, the Chiefs are going to score here. Now it's just a matter of can Philly conserve some time? Are they going to have a minute, a timeout? They're going to have a minute and a half, three timeouts. Like, what can Philly do here to try to get the ball back? And then ultimately, right, we know what happens. They don't really get the ball back because of the holding penalty on James Bradberry. 3rd and 8, a minute 48 left in the game. Philly 15, so they need to get to the 7 for a first down. Can't get a first down and not score here. And James Bradberry gets called on the hold on Juju Smith-Schuster. And this was, listen, there was a huge reaction to this play after the game. And I think rightfully so, because we were in the midst of a classic Super Bowl coming down to the wire. We are in it. We're enthralled. We're locked in. We're ready to go. And then it just sort of took you out of the moment to see a penalty just sort of end the game. It ended the game, right? That penalty basically ended the game. At that point, the Chiefs could take it down with enough time that they end up kicking a field goal with 8 seconds, essentially icing it all. And in that moment, knowing that that holding penalty ended the game, sucked. It sucked. And a lot of people took it out on the refs, saying it's a bogus call, it's this and that. There is a hold on the play. There's video evidence, there's picture evidence, there's a hold on the play. You see James Bradberry, you see a jersey in his hand pulled away from Juju Smith-Schuster's body. So there is a hold on the play. The refs after the game, they're asked about it, they're like, yep, it was a clear hold. We all saw it, the jersey hold. There really wasn't a question for us on whether to call a penalty or not. James Bradberry, the player who was called the penalty was called on, was asked about it after the game. He said, yeah, I held. I was hoping I'd get away with it. I didn't think they'd call it, and they did. So all that to be, it still sucks that that's how this ended. It's still okay to be disappointed that this Super Bowl feels like it ended or was determined by this penalty. But let's not conflate this into saying that a Super Bowl really was determined by this call or wasn't determined by this call. Because this is a penalty. They did correctly call it. We can all be disappointed that it ends like this because, again, that still sucks. It sucks that that happened. But I don't necessarily think it was egregious. Was it was it necessary? I guess, of course not. But we could also argue necessary. You know, is any penalty necessary at certain moments? I think you could get really in the weeds on that kind of stuff. So as I've reflected over this the last 24 hours, that's where I've landed on it, Mitch. I think ultimately we don't know how the game turns out if it's not called, right? We just simply don't. But what we do know is that that did make a difference in the play. There was a penalty there. They called it, and it sucked that the game felt like it ended on that play right there and not at the game-winning field goal.
Well, they were in field goal range when that happened. So, right.
We know they were going to score, but game, I mean, right. But we don't know what
the game. Yeah. So let me get there. Would the outcome of the game actually have been changed probably by making that call? Probably not. Like, they would have kicked the field goal. We would have had the 30-something seconds left. And so I guess you could say that Jalen Hurts just had more time to go down and try to make something happen. You can make that call. But this leaves a sour taste in my mouth the same way that Saints-Rams game a few years ago with the no call and the pass interference. It leaves that same sour taste in my mouth because it was game altering. It was game altering. And at that point, like the Saints Rams call, it was like, that's so egregious. You need to call that.
That was just bad officiating.
That was bad officiating.
Right.
Whereas this is on the flip side where it's like, you have to let them be physical in this point. You have to let them go play. Mm-hmm. And when you don't let them go play, it feels like you take the game out of the players' hands and you're putting it in the officials' hands. And I was it the right call? Probably. But that's not a call you make in that spot. You don't make that call in that spot. You just have to let them play the game because it's been physical all game. And let the guys continue to be physical. There's no scenario in my mind where that's a call that you need to make in that spot, because we're in the Super Bowl. We're at the height of the season. Let them be physical. Let them play. It wasn't even an egregious holding. Like, it was very ticky tacky, to be honest with you.
I mean, it was a hold. I mean, a hold.
It was
a hold.
Very.
That's my question, Mitch.
But it was a hold. But it was. Listen, it was extremely. It was ticky tacky.
I mean, I'm not saying it was the most, you know, egregious hold of all time. But I guess my worry on this is, at what point do we call that then? If we can agree that there's a hold on that play and a penalty has been committed, but that you shouldn't throw the flag in that situation unless it's egregious enough, then at what degree do the refs have to call it? How bad does the hold have to be before we throw the flag, right? Like, I think that now we're getting into the weeds of how bad a penalty has to be, right? When again, on the Saints
but that's,
and the
that,
Rams
but that's
thing,
semantics,
on the
because
Saints
if that,
and, but that's my point. So we shouldn't get into semantics. If there's a penalty and they call it, then it is what it is. There's a penalty, right? I mean, that's what we want refs to do. I don't want refs making judgment decisions in the moment on what should be a penalty and what shouldn't. I think that's a horrible place to end up at it. You know, I think in this case, again, like unlike the Rams in the Saints one, where you just had poor officiating, there is a no call. There is a penalty that was committed and no penalty thrown. In this case, there was a penalty committed and there was a penalty thrown, and it sucks and it feels ticky tacky. And it wasn't that egregious. It wasn't a full hold. He didn't fall to the ground. It's not a PI.
I mean, it was literally
still,
a hand on the middle of his back. It was a hand on the middle of his back.
Jersey pull, Mitch. There's a jersey pull. You can
see.
Oh,
there was hardly a jersey pull. There was hardly a jersey pull.
But there was hardly. Though. But there was. So that's I guess my question then. At what degree do we judge and now you throw the flag
the field,
or now you don't?
What's the difference right. make? What difference?
Well, that's why I'm
make?
Asking. Because at this point, if we how bad does the hold have to be to throw the flag then? If that wasn't enough of a hold, I guess is my question.
I mean, I don't know. I'm not an NFL official. I have no idea how bad it has to be, but I do know that you have to let the guys just go play and be physical. You have to. It is too big of a spot to make that call and alter the game in that way. I'm not saying that the officials altered the game in any way, by the way. But they altered it to an extent that it put them in better field goal position where they could just run out the clock and we have an anticlimactic finish.
Right.
And that's the gripe, I guess, that I have is like, man, you can't like, was it a hold? Yes. Was it a hold that was egregious enough to throw the flag in that spot? And as an official, you have to know the difference. No, it wasn't. I don't think it was. I think there was a hold. I don't think it was a bad enough hold to throw a flag in that spot. And I don't think anyone would have noticed had we not thrown the flag. I don't think anyone would have noticed that there was a hold because it was an overthrown ball.
All the Chiefs players were pointing at it and yelling at it.
Well,
so obviously
yeah,
the Chiefs did.
Everyone was pointing at everyone throughout the course of the game because they're trying to win a Super Bowl. Everyone was pointing at everyone. So, like you just like the ball was overthrown anyway.
Was it because of a hold? I don't know.
You cannot say if he got held enough to not complete that route and get that then get that pass.
Well, we don't know. Can't. That's what we're saying. You're saying.
But it was overthrown by 10 yards. You can't say that.
There's a hold on the play. My point is, and I am with you then, because my initial reaction was like, I hate this. I don't like this. I'm not agreeing with the situation. I'm not like happy about the situation. But I do think it's a slippery slope to ask of NFL officials who have clearly shown that they're not very good at this job to make judgment decisions in these moments based on how egregious holds can be or how egregious they should be to warrant penalties within certain times of certain games. I just feel like that's a slippery slope to be down. And if they call a penalty on a penalty, like I'm happy they called a penalty on a penalty, Mitch. And we're not talking about this on a play where there was no hold. Right. Like, I'm just glad we're not talking about this where there was nothing happening and they still called it, because the thing is they do that. And that is a problem. I would rather them just call it when they see it. And again, something happened again. It just sucks. It just sucks because it's the Super Bowl. It just sucks because it's the Super
Bowl. Like, that's not play altering.
There's a hold. There's a hold. There's I can
say not play altering.
That it doesn't have to be play altering.
The ball was overthrown by 10 yards.
So penalties only happen on play altering plays?
That's not what I'm saying. Don't put words in my mouth. I'm asking.
I'm trying to understand because I don't understand the semantics.
You're
of getting
in
into
the
what,
biggest spot
like
of
what
the entire
penalties
season.
Or what?
No, you're in the biggest moment of the entire season, and you want to call a holding call on a quarterback on a receiver when the ball's overthrown by 10 yards. The guy's not going to get there anyway.
Don't hold the jersey. You know what I mean? Like, those are the rules, Mitch. The rules of the game didn't change in the moment. If they want to hold all game and get away with it, they can. But it is what it is. So, it just sucks.
I can't get it.
It just sucks because, okay. All right. That's fine.
Yeah. No. I didn't want to capitalize it on that. But, you know, man, I don't know. We disagree. But, dang. I think we can both agree that we hate to see the game end that way, though. We hate to see the game iced that way on a holding call.
All right, Mitch, that's pretty much it for the game. Any other notes on any of the festivities at all? Anything after the game that was notable?
Man, not necessarily. I mean, the Super Bowl halftime show, I guess, is the only one that really comes to mind. I thought Rihanna did a great job. Congratulations on the new baby, by the way. She's pregnant and did that pregnant. That was fantastic. Congratulations. But, I think it's a really hard act to follow after maybe a top five performance we had all time last year. Like, it's a really tough act to follow. And I've had some time to think about it and digest it. Rihanna was good, but man, it was a little disappointing, and it's probably because we were spoiled with an all-time performance last year. Maybe that's where I'm at.
Yeah, that's probably fair. I mean, I think there was probably a general letdown just because, Trey and Snoop Dogg and all that was incredible. But I think a lot of it too was nobody knew that she was pregnant while she was you may have guessed as you saw, but then maybe you didn't want to guess because you're like, is she or isn't she? I don't want to,
don't want to be rude.
But she also wasn't moving like at all. She was pretty stationary. And so as I'm watching, I'm kind of putting together like she may or may not be pregnant here, because why? She's like not moving around at all. She's pretty much just standing in one place, little movements. And now we come to find out she's pregnant. It makes more sense in that regard. Maybe that's disappointing that we could have seen a better Rihanna performance had she not, had to worry about the physical limitations of being pregnant and performing, but certainly impressive to see her pull that off while pregnant. I thought some of the stage design was cool. And ultimately, Rihanna has hits. We talked about this, Mitch. Rihanna has hits. And she just let the hits, she just let the hits ring. And that was good. That was good enough for me. I enjoyed it. Wasn't as good as last year, sure. But again, like I said earlier on this podcast, we want to make everything the greatest, the worst, the best this, the most this. It's like, it doesn't have to be the best every year. This one could just be good. And I thought Rihanna was pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. 100% agree with you.
Okay. All righty. Well, I think that's all we got today for the podcast. A little Super Bowl 57 reaction for you folks. Appreciate you sticking around. If you were watching live tonight for the hour, We were live a little different time, a little different date. But if you got a chance to tune in live on YouTube or Twitter, we appreciate it. If you're listening to the podcast feed later on this week, appreciate you listening. If you don't already, you got to check out the socials, the Instagram at the Sports Hour Guys. Don't want to miss that. TikTok at the Sports Hour Guys. Lots of content going up on those places. Also, check out the website, thesportshourguys.wordpress.com. Mitch, remind the people about Anchor.
Anchor is the only place that you can become a permanent part of the conversation. Get on anchor.fm/thesportshourguys. You see it right there at the bottom on the ticker. And become a permanent part of the conversation. If you have a comment to leave, you can get on anchor.fm/thesportshourguys. Leave us a voice message. We'll play it live right here on the show. We'll answer that question right here, right now. Anchor.fm/thesportshourguys. You can listen to the podcast wherever you get your podcast, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you look up the Sports Hour Guys, we will be there. Get on Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating review, tell us that we suck, because Dallin, that is the only way that we can get better.
Yes, it is. And we would like to do that. So, again, no regular Wednesday episode this week. So don't worry about it. We will take the hiatus and be back with more on the other side. So till next time, we love you. We appreciate you. And we'll catch you next week.
So long, everybody. And a very pleasant good evening to you, wherever you may be. See ya.